This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, June 8th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, a closely watched policing reform bill died last night in the state's Senate Finance Committee. Proponents say the bill was meant to reduce the risk of fatal encounters with police by limiting arrestable offenses. Boulder County is scaling back its COVID-19 testing sites while focusing on efforts to get shots into arms. We'll hear about a Pride Month vaccine equity clinic happening on Saturday. Then H2O Radio brings us the latest edition of This Week in Water. At the bottom of the hour, we'll play our weekly comment line, comments from listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU. At 8:30, it's How on Earth. In today's science show, we hear about technology to harvest energy from ambient heat. At 9 a.m., it's The Wit and Wisdom of Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, The Morning Sound Alternative, 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. But first, it's time for local and regional headlines. A tornado touched down late Monday afternoon in Weld County, east of Interstate 25, and covered a path of about 14 miles. No injuries to humans were reported, but the tornado did kill at least 2 animals. Downed power lines caused a house fire and the temporary closure of a highway. We'll have more on today's weather coming up. A Denver group unhappy with the city council's decision to change rules about how many people can live together have collected enough petition signatures to ask voters to overturn the measure this November. KGNU's Steve Miller says the issue is similar to the one in Boulder called Bedrooms Are for People.
The Denver City Council's decision of increasing 2 unrelated people living in a single home together to 5 unrelated people living in a home together will now be up to the voters. Voters will also be deciding whether to overturn expanding the number of available plots in the city for halfway homes, including out of industrial areas. The Denver Post reports that the group Safe and Sound Denver, who collected the signatures, have argued that both increasing group living numbers and allowing halfway homes outside of industrial areas would harm neighborhoods. But city housing and community corrections officials disagree, saying that no matter the group living limits in a given city, the average number of people living in a home remains about the same. Plus, expanding the number of available places where halfway houses can be built gives people who are transitioning back into society a better chance at turning their lives around. In Boulder, the group Bedrooms Are for People has gathered signatures to place a measure on November's ballot that would eliminate a decades-old restriction that allows no more than 3 unrelated people to live together, and instead allow for 1 person per bedroom plus 1 additional person per house. The signatures have been submitted to the city, and the group is awaiting verification. It will appear on the ballot. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Mead High School principal Rachel Ayers announced her resignation Monday, 2.5 weeks after a photo of 3 Mead High School students reenacting George Floyd's murder in the school parking lot was shared on social media. Ayers did not state the reason for her resignation, and the superintendent said he couldn't comment on personnel matters. Ayers had worked for 12 years as a teacher, assistant principal, and principal at Mead High School. Frederick High principal Brian Young was appointed to take over as Mead High's principal. The Daily Camera reported that in response to the photo incident, the NAACP Boulder County and other local organizations have asked the district to take several steps to address the incident and systemic racism in schools. Boulder County Public Health announced Monday it would begin ramping down its testing efforts by closing several COVID-19 testing sites. In a news release, the health department said the need for testing sites had diminished because vaccinations have increased. Meanwhile, the city of Louisville has announced fully vaccinated individuals are no longer required to wear masks in city buildings, including the Louisville Recreation and Senior Center, the Louisville Public Library, and the museum. This decision was guided by the recommendations of state and local health agencies. The city said those who are unvaccinated, including children aged 2 and older, are still recommended to wear masks while indoors. Bankruptcy filings were down in Boulder County in May and across much of northern Colorado. A BizWest analysis of U.S. bankruptcy court data showed statewide there were 646 bankruptcy filings in May, down from 733 a year ago. That means the total bankruptcies in the state were down almost 21% from May of 2020. Boulder County recorded 14 bankruptcy filings in May, compared with 21 in May of last year. Similar reductions were also true for Larimer and Weld counties. The city of Thornton has gone to court against the Weld County Board of Commissioners after the commissioners denied the city's application to build a water pipeline. The Colorado Sun reports that Thornton is nearing a deadline to construct a pipeline from a reservoir near Fort Collins. City officials believe that the quickest and most direct way for the city to get approval for a Weld County pipeline is through the courts, rather than submitting a whole new application. Thornton started the process for the Weld County section of the Thornton Water Project in 2015, and 3 years later, the city formally submitted its application to build a pipeline through 34 miles of unincorporated county land. The city is engaged in a separate legal battle with the Larimer County Board of Commissioners, who denied a similar application from Thornton in 2019. Another high temperature near 90 degrees is today's weather forecast for the Front Range. Same for tomorrow, and possibly 95 on Thursday, and then back to 80 by Friday. Outside our Boulder studios, it's currently 60 degrees. A closely watched bill that would have limited Colorado law enforcement from making arrests for low-level offenses died in a state house committee on Monday after it failed to receive enough support from Democrats to move forward. It was the second version of the legislation to be rejected this year. Senate Bill 273 sought to reduce jail populations statewide by limiting what offenses law enforcement could arrest someone for, and instead requiring police officers and sheriff's deputies to issue tickets and summons to the court. The bill narrowly failed in the House Finance Committee, with two Democrats, Representative Shannon Byrd of Westminster and Representative Matt Gray of Broomfield, joining the four Republicans on the panel in voting no. The movement of SB 273 through the chambers featured hours of testimony from people who had been directly affected by arrests for low-level offenses or whose loved ones had died after an arrest that the legislation sought to avoid. Data scientist Samson Nyangwe, co-founder of Campaign Zero, put his support for the bill into numbers during his testimony before the House Judiciary Committee late last week.
Over the past 6 years, we have worked to collect data on people who've been killed by police across the country, including building the most comprehensive database of police violence at Mapping Police Violence. And one of the things that we found in examining the data was that Black people are three times more likely to be killed by police nationwide than white people. And Colorado has one of the highest rates of police violence in the country, the sixth highest rate among the 50 states. And in Colorado, Black people are four times more likely to be killed by police than white people. What we also found that was that so many of these deaths were occurring in response to low-level nonviolent offenses. The majority of people who've been killed by police in Colorado, as has been said, were killed in response to a low-level offense, a mental health call, or a situation where no specific crime was alleged at all. But yet people are losing their lives over these encounters. And what we are seeing across the country is a movement to push back on that model of policing, a model that in the state of Colorado sees Black people eight times more likely to be arrested for a low-level offense than white people, and as we've described, more likely to be killed by police following those encounters. Now, you have a simple question to answer as legislators, and that is, should people, disproportionately Black and brown people, continue to lose their lives after being stopped by police and arrested for some of these low-level, nonviolent issues, issues that there are already responses being piloted to that are far more effective than policing and incarceration. Right in Colorado, in Denver, you have the STAR program that's being piloted in response to mental health issues. Folks who are accused of trespassing or loitering, having open containers of alcohol, other low-level offenses, and instead of arresting them, they're being connected to services. They're being responded to by civilian mental health professionals. There are other approaches to these issues that are not about arresting and incarcerating and even killing people over the smallest of things. And you have the opportunity to chart the state in a different direction, to be a model for the rest of the country in how to deal with some of these issues in ways that are not punitive, that do not result in a worse outcome to begin with, but that instead create opportunities for people, that connect people to services, and that deal with some of the underlying root causes that are responsible for what we are seeing. Issues of poverty, issues of homelessness, issues of mental health and substance use. There are approaches to those issues that are evidence-based, that are effective, and that don't harm or kill the subject of those interventions.
SB 273 encountered strong opposition from the bail bonds industry. Bill supporters say they had secured enough yes votes to confidently predict the bill would have passed had it reached a floor vote in the House. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Boulder County Public Health announced Monday it would begin ramping down its testing efforts by closing several COVID-19 testing sites. In a news release, the health department said the need for testing sites had diminished because vaccinations have increased. A testing center run by BCPH at Boulder County Fairgrounds will close on June 9th, and the St. Vrain Valley Schools Innovation Center testing site will close June 18th. The testing site at Stasio Ballfields is currently scheduled to remain open through September 30th. Despite closing the locations, the county still encourages those with symptoms of COVID-19 to get tested, even if they have been vaccinated. If you're in your 30s and overdue for your second dose of a COVID vaccine, you may be getting a text message this week from the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. And if you still haven't gotten around to making an appointment and would like a one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine, Out Boulder County and El Centro Amistad are holding a vaccine equity clinic Saturday. Nate George of Out Boulder County has the details.
So we are having an equity clinic focused on the LGBTQ and Latinx populations on June the 12th from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. at First United Methodist Church. It's the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, so it's just one dose. We plan on making it more of a celebration of getting a vaccine, getting your vaccine, than it is about like, oh, I just got a vaccine. We want you to come and have a good time. You know, you're going to get entered into the state's lottery for $1 million, but we are also going to give you lottery tickets. So hopefully you can win extra money on top of that. There'll be gift bags. There's music. There's always snacks. And, you know, for a vaccine clinic, it's always a rip-roaring good time. And, you know, and in Pride Week, it couldn't come at a better time for us.
Again, that's this Saturday at First United Methodist Church.
¿Ya escuchaste la buena noticia? La radio comunitaria KGNU tiene su propia aplicación móvil. Descárgala para cualquiera de tus dispositivos digitales gratis y empieza a escucharnos ya. Did you hear the news? KGNU Community Radio has a mobile app. Download it for free in any of your devices and start listening to us now.
Many of the world's lakes are in trouble. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Nearly the entire U.S. West is experiencing some level of drought, and more than a quarter is an exceptional drought, the highest level of dryness on the federal government's tracking monitor.
In California, the snowpack, a crucial source of water for the state, was at 0% of average for June 1st after an historically dry winter. Levels of more than 1,500 reservoirs are 50% lower than normal for this time of year.
In Utah, Governor Spencer Cox asked residents to join him in a weekend of prayer for more rain. In Nevada, water levels have dropped so drastically in Lake Mead on the Colorado River that officials are preparing for major reductions in deliveries next year.
In Oregon, some landowners have talked about taking matters into their own hands and forcibly opening irrigation gates closed due to the water crisis.
The Biden administration suspended oil and gas leases in Alaska's National Wildlife Refuge last week, reversing Trump's decision to make parts of the pristine area available for fossil fuel and mineral development.
However, the Biden administration is supporting the Willow Project by the oil giant ConocoPhillips on Alaska's North Slope, which could damage another sensitive Arctic landscape. Alaska has warmed more than twice as fast as the rest of the U.S. since 1960, and burning oil from Willow may lead to the release of greenhouse gases in an amount equivalent to more than 60 coal-fired power plants.
The administration declined to explain how its position on the Willow Project is consistent with its climate change policy. One irony of the Willow development is that ConocoPhillips will have to install chillers into the permafrost, which is fast melting because of climate change, to keep it solid enough to support the equipment to drill for oil, the burning of which will continue to worsen ice melt.
Research has shown that the world's oceans are losing oxygen because of the climate crisis and increased runoff from agriculture. The combination is creating dead zones that have dire consequences for marine life.
But now a new study shows that freshwater lakes are losing oxygen too, and at a rate 3 to 9 times faster than the oceans over the past 40 years. It's an alarming trend that could threaten aquatic life and drinking water supplies.
A team of researchers led by Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute looked at dissolved oxygen from nearly 400 lakes around the globe and found that it fell by just under 6% in surface waters and 3 times that at lower depths.
Global warming is the main cause because the amount of oxygen that water can hold goes down as it heats up. In addition, when the top layers of lakes get hotter than deep water, natural mixing is reduced and oxygen supply to the aquatic life near the bottom falls.
The declining oxygen levels have serious implications for ecosystems because although lakes make up only about 3% of Earth's land surface, they contain a high concentration of the planet's biodiversity.
Also, as oxygen levels drop, the number of methane-emitting bacteria increases, releasing greenhouse gases and creating a loop where global warming is perpetuated.
For 10,000 years, a small tribe of Native Americans lived on an island off the coast of Maine. In 1794, Pine Island was formally recognized as Passamaquoddy land in a treaty by the state of Massachusetts for their contributions during the Revolutionary War.
But when Maine became a state, the treaty was voided and the tribe was effectively evicted. However, earlier this year, the Passamaquoddy bought the island back for $355,000 using money raised from conservation charities.
The Guardian reports that the reclaiming of Pine Island is the latest success in the Land Back campaign by U.S. indigenous groups in response to the loss of 1.5 billion acres since 1776.
Last July, the Esalen people of Central California purchased about 2 square miles of their land. And in 2019, the Wiat tribe won back the 280-acre Dulawat Island in Northern California when the city of Eureka returned it for free.
And finally, elephants' trunks are iconic. No other land animal on Earth has a similar long, boneless appendage strong enough to uproot trees, dexterous enough to paint with a paintbrush, and possessing a better sense of smell than dogs.
Despite being ubiquitous in popular culture, scientists know very little about the trunk's anatomy. So Andrew Schultz, a PhD student at Georgia Tech, set out to learn more.
Using high-speed video, he was able to understand how an elephant's respiratory system gives the animals extraordinary inhalation abilities. Schultz watched a pachyderm from the Atlanta Zoo suck up nearly a gallon of water in 1.5 seconds, which meant it was drawing in air at a rate of 330 miles per hour, the equivalent of a bullet train, and 30 times faster than a human sneeze.
Because the amount of liquid seemed like more than the trunk could hold, Schultz used ultrasound imaging to reveal that the nostrils were dilating to expand its total volume by 64%.
Schultz says, contrary to popular belief, the trunk does not act like a straw. Rather, elephants store water there to drink later through their mouths or to spray on themselves to cool off. So, essentially, an elephant's trunk is a trunk.
That's it for this week in water. We'll see you next time.
And we now check in with KGNU's Comment Line when we hear what's on the minds of listeners.
Hi, I'm listening to a very interesting program. I think it started at 8:30 on Thursday morning, covering a conference about the climate being sponsored by Boulder and other cities, an organization they belong to. And I'm listening to the opening comments by Jeffrey Sachs, which I found very interesting and useful. And then they were doing some questions afterwards. And they came to a question about including diverse communities in the planning or in the efforts to address the climate crisis that we're in. Sachs had just been talking about some of his suggestions of things that could be done. He listed many different things. Didn't say anything about including diverse communities. And this is something I've seen happen before in programs that KGNU has aired, which I've appreciated but found to be rather narrow in their perspective. But what I would like to suggest is that when KGNU holds or plays tapes of sessions that have happened that have been sponsored by organizations that they know are likely to present a fairly mainstream liberal perspective on issues, liberal to middle of the road, that KGNU consider having someone really representing a progressive point of view to respond to the program after it's aired. Anyway, just a suggestion. I hope you'll consider it. Thanks. My name is Nancy.
Yeah, my name is Larry, and I would like to forward some ska music to Donovan Maka. Love the guy, and love bluegrass. I like all your music and programs, so I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Please note that we usually edit for brevity comments that run longer than 90 seconds. Before we go, KGNU sadly reports the passing of music programmer David McWade. He joined KGNU in 2017 and was a regular eclectic DJ host on Sleepless Nights, The Afternoon Sound Alternative, and Smash It Back. After living in Pittsburgh for nearly three decades, David moved to Colorado as part of his career in relocation astrology and was a champion of progressive causes. His quirky taste in music and penchant for 80s synth will be missed by the KGNU community. And that's all we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks for tuning in. I've been your host, Shannon Young.